Well, hello, everybody, and welcome. Welcome to the Words, Women, and Wisdom radio show. This streaming live on BBS Radio from California and syndicating to over 100 stations globally. I'm your show host, Yvonne E.L. Silver. If we haven't connected yet, my mission is uplifting the spirit of humanity. And I do that by showcasing amazing women, women who've risen from tragedy to triumph, from a point of chaos to confidence, risen to success, and are now making a huge contribution to their community and globally. So I'm passionate about inspiring women, inspiring them to live into their potential, to elevate their confidence, especially visionary female leaders who are looking to, you know, scale up their business venture. My guest today, Connie Jacob, definitely fits in the visionary female leader category. I'll introduce her in just a moment. My work is primarily with founders and leaders, corporate professionals, six-figure women, and mission-inspired businesses, or those groups that have a social enterprise focus. People who are empowering other women are especially exciting to work with. And after serving on several boards and as a corporate VP and director with eight different startups and experiences, evolution and constant expansion are the keys for me to life being interesting and purposeful. So in the work that I do, teaching women to flourish in business, which is a passion of mine, and I do that through speaking, through my best-selling book, through coaching and mentorship, and my book, Words, Women, and Wisdom, The Modern Art of Confident Conversations, and hosting this show, it's about elevating confident living for women. So I want to welcome my guest today, who's also a confident woman on a mission, a mom. And, you know, when I think about confident women, I saw Connie speak twice recently at a couple of different events. One was with the Community Now, a mental health awareness celebration, and also with the Bell Canada Let's Talk Day just last week. And I think about the words, you know, confidence and value and impact and fun. And Connie fits in all of those categories. So I'm delighted to share the radio show today with Connie and hear from her about her growth and expansion in particular, what she's learned most recently, and what are some very, very critical things, not just that mums need to be hearing, although obviously I advertise to mums today, but also to parents who really are passionate about helping their kids to be the best possible versions of themselves. And in today's marketplace and economy and school system, that's sometimes a bit of a challenge. So Connie Jacob has seen her son go from suicidal at the young age of 8 to now being 13 and living. Wow. Now, her crisis isn't unique to her. Too many young people are suffering the same with their parents, who very often have no idea what to do. And this is her story today. Connie is the owner of the Jacob Company and the senior manager of Wellness Innovate, two companies that are all about changing home and work environments for mental health and wellness. She's also the author of Bring Them Closer and two other books. I'll let her talk about that a little bit later. And she's passionate about rebelling against the status quo and encouraging others to branch out. And that's what I saw her talking about and doing personally in the last couple of months, last week and then before Christmas as well. She's also the director of National Hope Talks and the Hope Movement, Combating Mental Health in Canada. She's a sought-out speaker for her raw honesty and her humor. She really is a passionate lady who is looking for radical and meaningful change and lives with a husband and two boys here in Calgary, Alberta, in Canada. So Connie's going to talk a little bit about how do you bring the hurting closer when we're all hurt. So welcome, Connie. So glad that you've joined me. And despite technical difficulties, we'll cross our fingers that all stays up on the line now.
Welcome. Good. Well, I'm just so happy to know it wasn't me, because usually stuff like that is all my fault.
Well, I thought it was my phone, so. Anyway, we're here. So you have such an interesting background, and yet it's also, you know, a very painful story of rising from, you know, chaos to confidence that I think few people are aware of. Obviously, more are getting aware of it as you're out doing your speaking. And as a mom, obviously, we do the very best that we can for our children. And you have a very important learning to share with our audience today. So maybe we could start by, you know, telling me a little bit about your son and around, you know, what happened, and then we'll get into, you know, how you were able to turn things around with some important insights that you learned along the way. And I do want to just make a note for listeners, if you're listening live and you have questions you wanted to dial in and you know, learn from Connie, the number to call, if you have a pen handy, is 1-888-627-6008. So 1-888-627-6008. So Connie, tell us your story. What happened and how you're able to turn things around?
Yeah, so my son, he was our first. And so when he was little, we always knew something was a little off, but it was hard to know because we were first-time parents, and we thought, this parenting thing is really hard. And when he was 6 years old and we got an assessment that he had a diagnosis of anxiety, depression, oppositional defiance disorder, and ADHD, we were really relieved to realize that we were struggling with some really difficult challenges. And but it didn't answer anything of how to help him. All we knew is that now we knew what he was dealing with. But I had no understanding of what my boy needed. And so, you know, it was a frustrating few years after that, trying to figure out how do we get him help. We couldn't find him help. He would behave so well when we did get a pediatric appointment. And so it wasn't until 8 years old he became suicidal. And a lot of people think, how does an eight-year-old become suicidal? But it's actually quite simple. When they're constantly being bombarded at home and at school with people who don't understand them, that's the first thing that comes to their mind. And it's interesting how there's many families that are coming out of the woodwork as I share my story, that 8 years old, this is an age that keeps coming up. I mean, teenagers as well, but particularly with kids, I keep hearing the age eight and these suicidal thoughts. And I remember one psychiatrist said, well, if he ever does threaten suicide, you need to take him to the hospital. And so the next time he did, my husband and I, we put him in the van and we took him to the hospital. And I didn't realize how much that was going to disrupt our life. He was there for 3 weeks. You don't know how long they're going to be there. The great thing about being in the hospital is that now we're getting immediate help. The help that we had been knocking on doors for 4 years was now available to us in abundance. But we didn't know when he was going to come home. We weren't allowed to visit him other than, you know, a couple of hours here and there. And it was quite the experience. But what really changed for us was when the psychologist asked us, so what do you do when your son is throwing fits of rage? Because that's how depression showed up for him. Mm-hmm. And that's why I had such a hard time working with him, because sadness would have been easy. I could have come alongside of him, put my arm around him. But it was aggression and rage and threatening us, threatening our youngest. It was hiding the knives so that nothing could happen. And so she asked me, what do you do when he is throwing these rages? And I said, well, I send him to his room. And I tell him, when you're going to be a good boy, that's when you can come out. And that's how I was raised. Yeah. And what she said has changed everything for us. She said, oh, no, you never send the hurting away from you. You bring them closer. And I didn't have any idea what she meant. I didn't know what that would look like. All I know is that 3 weeks later, he came home, medicated, and now we have a counselor, and I'm thinking life is going to be awesome. We finally have a solution. The medication's going to just be a miracle pill. Counseling is going to work. But when he had that first fit of rage, when we came home, I just fell into such desperation wondering, I thought this was going to change. I thought things would be different. When is this ever going to get better? And I was just about to send him to his room, and I remembered what she said. She said, bring him closer. So I kept him in the same room as me. And he's throwing this massive rage, and I'm trying to put my arms around him. He's not having any part of it. But I just said to him, son, you belong in our house. We love you. We're going to sit here with you until you feel healed and whole. And I remember having to show up like that for a year, not just a week, not just one or two times. It was a year of consistently showing up like that in his mess. And that's the reason why now, even now, he still has the diagnosis. It hasn't gone away. He's 13 years old. Any normal 13-year-old is a case of anxiety in its own. And when he has those times, now all we have to do is come and sit next to him, and he just softens. And it really taught me that there's a lot of hope for our kids and our youth who are struggling with diagnoses such as anxiety and depression and opposition.
Well, I totally appreciate you sharing with raw honesty what happened, because I think that, you know, so often as parents, there's a tendency to, you know, be proud of them when they do well and then hide things that don't publicly seem acceptable. And, you know, as the mother of a special needs child myself, I mean, certainly I've, over the past 24 years had a variety of experiences that have, you know, some similarity to what you're sharing. Alex was never diagnosed with ADHD. His issues are special gifts are more around development. However, other people in public don't know what to do when all of a sudden they see someone's child having a seizure. And, you know, people react differently to that, especially if you're in a restaurant, for example. And we had a recent hospital experience that also was something which really opened my eyes to, you know, what can be available when you're in an emergency situation. And, you know, given what was happening with him, we were also directed to, you know, go to emergency right away. And the fact that we were providing a loving home environment, you know, two sets of parents and step-parents, and a nice, comfortable, loving home to be in after he was dismissed from the hospital, all of a sudden it seemed like his supports came to a grinding halt, because all of a sudden the urgency had disappeared from the situation, which is very sad. And it's taken about three, four months, to actually get some things rolling again for his complex needs, which is really sad. So you've obviously learned a lot about navigating through the different services and systems. I want to go back to, you know, what you recognize. So my son was 6 months when he was diagnosed. And it was a very informal diagnosis of taking him to daycare when I went back to work part-time at 6 months old, and having the daycare director pulling me aside and saying, dear, you might not have realized, or you might want to know that by now your son should be doing this, and he should be doing that, and he should be doing this, and he's not doing any of these things. You might want to get him checked out. Well, that was a really big slap in the face. A wake-up call, because like you, he was my first. They don't come with an instruction manual. They're all different, different capabilities. And all of my girlfriends that had baby girls, which we know advanced faster than boys. So I wasn't concerned or worried that he wasn't doing some of those things just yet. I just thought he was a little bit slower to develop. I didn't think anything was was really wrong or medically different. So interesting what curveballs life throws at us. So any words of wisdom to parents listening, mums in particular, about early recognition of some of those other things that you found out at, I think you said he was age six, when you found out that some of these behaviors were actually able to be categorized in a specific way and had some opportunity for some treatments. What should parents be looking out for?
Well, I know for us, we just noticed, I mean, it's really hard when they're little, like 2 years old, 3 years old. I can now even recognize some of his opposition and ADHD all the way back to 18 months. But when they're that young, you just think, oh, this is because they're little. Things like not being able to listen to instruction after the 10th time of telling him. I mean, I get it. You know, when they're little, 3 times, 4 times, even 5. But, you know, when you're having to repeat and repeat and repeat, and the only time he's listening is when mommy has finally blown her lid, you think this can't be normal. And having to do that a couple of times a day, not just once in a while. So that was one thing we really noticed. And then just this inability to be flexible whatsoever, no ability to be, to say no so much. I thought, this can't be right either. And I mean, I've worked with young people for 20 years and I'd never seen anything like this. And so you're battling in your mind, you're wondering, is this just what it's like to be a parent? Or, you know, is this my lot in life? But, you know, there's that gut feeling. I think parents, we have been given this beautiful gift of this intuition and this gut feeling. And I would always say, you know, notice the gut feelings and keep watching and being curious. Don't ignore it. One of the greatest problems that I deal with in my line of resilience work is parents who refuse to look or admit that there's a problem, because that is just setting the child up for a lot of pain and not resilience in their life if no one is admitting that there's something wrong here. And it's not even about it being wrong. It's about, let's get the help that they need so that they can succeed. Because I have ADHD, and I think it's actually an absolute gift for people. But we do need to have, there's certain things that need help in to help a person with ADHD or opposition. They can become who they are meant to be if we don't ignore the signs.
Right. Well, like any, you know, what's labeled typically a disability, once understood, can definitely be a special ability. And I mean, I remember when Alex was 18, he got an opportunity to be, you know, through his school program, to stay on another year. And they sort of created a grade 13 program, which was a work term program. And he was working out in Sears, when we used to have Sears in Marble Mall. And he was assigned to spend the morning untangling the metal wires that they wrap around expensive boxes of, you know, pots and pans and things that were all in one big heap. And I thought about it afterwards, and I thought, you know, I don't know very many people that would have the patience to sit and untangle those things for a whole morning, right? He spent a whole morning, which I think he enjoyed it more, putting ties out in a display. And it was like a rainbow fan of color that, you know, each of them were equally spaced. He was very particular about getting the display set up, so much so that the manager came over afterwards, took a photograph of it, and showed it to all the other employees because he was so thrilled with the beautiful work that he'd done. But it had taken him a little bit longer to do it. And yet, again, it's that understanding that the way that their brains work, there are certain roles that are so so special that your regular kid wouldn't necessarily want to do.
Isn't that true?
Yeah, and exactly what you said earlier about watching for the signs and really paying attention to your gut instinct as a parent. And I had that experience when Alex had his first seizure, where he had actually been quite, he was a year old, he'd actually been quite gray, very pale that day. And a little bit of sickness, and we'd taken him into the hospital earlier on, and they'd said, oh yeah, he's just got the flu. So we'd been sent home, and about half an hour later, I'm sort of laying with him, cuddled into me on the couch, and he's looking very, very gray. And then all of a sudden, his right hand started to twitch and started to shake, and then it just gradually went all the way up the right side of his body and, you know, turned into a grand mal seizure. So, I mean, at the time, we had literally just left the hospital, so we bundled him back up in the car and dashed off to the hospital and back in through the outdoor of emergency and got him treated right away. But you know, had I not been paying attention, I mean, they were saying putting him to bed, just check on him now and then. And I was like, no, I think I just need to be with him. I need to watch over him right now. And that was when he had his first seizure. And, you know, you talk about watching your kids, and you know, I don't remember much that was worse later on than watching your one-year-old baby getting, you know, stuck in the neck with a massive needle to stop a seizure. I mean, it was horrible.
Oh, that would be.
Ladies, a new book is on the horizon. Words, Women, and Wisdom, The Modern Art of Confident Conversations. This new book is for women ready to rediscover their inner confidence, take a stand for themselves in life and business by using more powerful language. Words are so powerful and already changed history. On October 5th, The New York Times published a story detailing decades of allegations of sexual harassment against film producer Harvey Weinstein. And numerous women in the entertainment industry found the courage to go public, banding together with a powerful voice that change is long overdue. Even Oprah Winfrey, television network icon, gave a rousing speech at the Golden Globe Awards in January. The media has showcased the Time's Up Legal Defense Fund. The Me Too movement is flourishing and all signaling it's time for women's equality and change. I believe it's time to give women the verbal agility to create more confident conversations. Words, Women, and Wisdom, The Modern Art of Confident Conversations is the book which provides practical approaches for women to ask for what we really want and receive our request.
Hello, I'm Yvonne Silver, certified executive coach and senior HR professional, seasoned in business. I teach women to flourish in business by using more confident language to help empower and engage others. This book is the result of over 35 years of my career, professional career, working in 4 different countries. I've interviewed over 6,000 people in my career for job interviews, executive coaching, for sales and consulting conversations. And I've listened to hundreds of women in particular who are looking for a better way to collaborate. They're looking to be asking for what they really want and heard and validated, especially in business. And women often earn less than men for doing exactly the same job. It's 2018. It's time for change.
The Modern Art of Confident Conversations explores words we use at home, at work, words that trip us up, elevate us, and encourage us, and when no words are even required. It is about how to leverage the power of words in a positive, in a collaborative and impactful way. Now I work with women entrepreneurs and leaders who are empowering other women and leading through mentorship programs and my coaching, public speaking, interviews, and writing. I'm passionate about women's equality. Why? I grew up in England in a house with a flow of negative comments from my father, which destroyed my mum's dignity until she became an empty shell of the vibrant woman she'd once been, belittled by constant criticism and questioning of her abilities. Through my own life journey and supporting hundreds of female clients, I've discovered critical words to ask to get what we really want collaboratively. I know there are critical links between our language, our behavior, our mindset, and our success in life. Words from a song can replay in our head for hours, and poetry can bring a lump in our throats. I've combined my insights with interviews from influential women, sharing their pearls of wisdom, supplemented with research and reference studies from established scholars. Women are rising up. It's time for women to be heard. Let's use more powerful, positive language and join the rising tide of change. This book is for you, a woman looking to the future, ready to embrace significant positive changes in your life by using more confident language. Eliminate those words that drain your power, add words that energize and invigorate, and shift from ordinary to extraordinary. Just one word can change your life. I believe every woman needs their own copy of this powerful book. It's time for action and time for change. Order and reserve your own copy of Words, Women, and Wisdom today.
A lot of these experiences are experiences that help us later on to live into our gifts and live into our purpose. And one of the things that having a special needs son has taught me is about being an advocate and not saying, yes, okay, I'll go along with everything I'm being told, because that could create a waiting list of years before he would have gotten any treatment, before he would have got seen, before he would have been into special programming, accessing PUF funding. I mean, all of those kinds of things. You really have to be a very strong advocate, confidently speaking up, because in his case, he wasn't very articulate. People didn't understand him as a kid. He wasn't walking until he was 2.5. So a lot of things that kids do typically, he didn't have that ability yet. And you're a very strong advocate as well, now speaking out with the work that you've been doing with Let's Talk and Bell. So let's talk a little bit about how you've been able to leverage some of these experiences and passionately turn them into action.
Yeah, I think when you have the lived experience, there's nothing like that. I mean, I had worked with youth at risk for 20 years. I had a lot of book smarts when it came to resilience and working with young people, but, you know, nothing really hit home until it was at home. And then I started to really see, I saw through that lens. And, you know, a lot of my work used to be in schools, and I would watch in schools that were in lower income areas that would be considered, oh, you know, those people. And then I'd go to the private school where parents are paying up to 10 grand a year for their kid to be in there, and seeing my son everywhere, no matter where people were coming from, seeing the anxiety, almost a heightened awareness, and realizing that, you know, this really does hit everybody. When I was working with youth, gang members, drug dealers in East Vancouver, you know, we used to always kind of talk about those families. And now realizing, oh, there's no such thing as those families, which has really driven my work with what I do with resilience in schools, in workplace, in home, really just trying to help parents. I've become such an advocate for parents to be brave, to not look away from these problems, but to know that inside of us there is a resilience that our kids need, to come back to the center plate of our kids' lives and to fight for them, and to know my experience has just shown me that there's a lot of hope. I get a little frustrated with the mental health messaging out there, when it looks like it's okay to not be okay, which I agree with. I think that we're finally coming to the place where we're realizing that mental health is normal. It's normal to struggle with anxiety and depression. But where I feel the hope is that we don't have to, our kids don't have to live in crisis, and they don't have to live with suicidal thoughts. Like that's where I think we need to take back some ground and not settle for status quo and realize that, oh, that's just the way it is, because it's not. Our kids can be better. I think that there's a real gap between the way we were raised and the way kids need us to raise them today. A smack upside the head might have worked for me to comply when I was a child, but when I tried that method of discipline with my own kids, I realized very quickly that damaged them, and very quickly had to come back to this idea of connection and bringing them closer, and saw what that actually does in their mind with their neurological wiring. It actually rewires their brain, and the anxiety is still there, but it's under control, and there's nothing they can't overcome when they know they belong in their family.
Yeah. Well, the whole concept of feeling supported and feeling loved, I mean, certainly, you know, growing up as a kid in England with a father that came back from the war with PTSD, you know, he was very much the command and control, you know, children should be seen and not heard, tell, and violent. And, you know, certainly when I was 16, I mean, I couldn't wait to get out of the house because I did not feel supported, you know, didn't feel that there was an opportunity for me to have their blessing. Well, my mom was very quiet. I mean, my dad literally drained the dignity right out of her with his very strong personality and, you know, high, just a very, very mean man. And that was the result of the illness, right? Mental illness. So, you know, it does become so, so important that we not judge. We look and we see what is and learn, you know, what are some adaptations that might be unique to our child, to our family lifestyle, and what is it that they need in order to flourish? I'm a big believer that you can't motivate someone else. What you can do, though, is create an environment that allows them to self-motivate when they feel comfortable, when they feel safe, when they feel supported, when they know that they're loved. So many beautiful things magically happen from that type of environment. And so, so important. And with technology today, I mean, I think that, you know, there's definitely a fabulous opportunity if we can start early where kids do not have, you know, phones at the dinner table, for example. You know, just to have that one small window of time where the family gets to reconnect is hugely important, and we can do so much good work as parents with straight conversation and inviting conversation in versus it all being through, you know, text messages and only being the influence of friends. Parents still have such a valuable and important role to play in helping the kids to cope with whatever's different, whatever's coming up on their plate, as you have done.
Yeah.
I love that.
Our kids are just dying.
Idea.
Yeah. Well, and you know, I wish I could meet this psychologist again. I don't even think she meant, and I don't think it's something that she created as a tagline. She just said that sentence, and it just stuck. And it's interesting. The more I share it, the more people share with me. That phrase has really stuck with me and helped me, just like it's helped myself.
Well, I think that it's simple, right? Because it's only three words. And, you know, I certainly, as I was listening to you speak last week, I heard you say it probably 10 times throughout your presentation. And it's, you know, for that reason, repetition, right? It sticks, but it's It's simple, it's impactful, and yet it's very often the opposite of what would come naturally. You know, as a parent, I mean, certainly I've experienced frustration. And yet there's so much more that we can do when we invite our kids to, you know, become part of the solution. And, you know, thinking back to, you know, when I had three teenagers at home that I inherited when I remarried, you know, there was no telling them anything, you know, because they were already 15, 17, and 19. So they knew everything, right? Teenagers, as teenagers do. So, you know, and as I share in my book, Words, Women, and Wisdom, The Modern Art of Confident Conversations, it's about finding a question that you can pose that will help them understand how they can solve their own problem. And when they solve their own problem, it's their idea. They're much more committed to it. You know, neuroplasticity is kicking in when they've come up with an idea and they take action on it within, you know, 3 to 5 days. It does. It rewires the brain because it's an opportunity to think creatively, think differently, make some new connections, wire them together, and progress, massive progress is made when we're not telling all the time. And your Bring Them Closer is another version of that. So great work. I know it's a work in progress. So you're taking that concept and you're also the author of Bring Them Closer. So that's a book that is available now for pre-order, right? It's not actually out yet, not quite?
Not quite. Not till the fall, the spring. So very soon. Okay.
It is almost spring. We're looking outside and we're seeing snowy weather outside today, but it's almost spring. So where can people get to access and pre-order their copy of that? Where do they go to do that?
So they can go to my website, ConnieJacob.com. My last name is J-A-K-A-B. It's my Hungarian husband. and right on there it says let's talk, and it just or there's an opportunity right there under books to just press that, and I will get back to them about how to go about pre-ordering the book, or maybe by the time they message me it might actually already be out, because I know it's coming very soon.
Okay, lovely. So that's Bring Them Closer, learning from Connie's story, more about what she's been able to embrace in terms of a concept, the impact it's making. So thank you so much for writing that and having that awareness. I'm also curious to learn a little bit more about the work that you're doing with Wellness Innovate, and also about the National Hope Talks and the Hope Movement. So let's talk a little bit about those.
Oh, sure, yes. So, well, the Hope Movement is basically, it's a Canadian-wide movement. It's starting with the conferences on Bell Let's Talk Day. This year we did three. We did one in Calgary and Edmonton and Delta, BC. And the idea is basically to bring people of all different sectors of society to the table, to sit around and to each one share what is mental health looking like from their context. That is the primary goal of every conference. And then out of that, asking what was common. And then that becomes our theme. And the movement side is throughout the year, how do we work on what everyone was saying? And what I found very interesting was that the conference that we did in Calgary, as well as Edmonton and Delta, they all said the same thing. Everyone, the words that came up was, we need to know how to connect better. We want to support people who are suffering, but we just don't know how to. So we realized that we really want to bring people closer, but we have no idea how to do that. And so we kind of, somebody had said the phrase, a safe place. How do we create a safe place? And our hearts just burst when we read that, and we thought, that's a great theme for this year. So the movement this year is about how do we create a safe place? And Wellness Innovate, which is where I work, the company that I work for, really works with companies to create psychological safety in the workplace. one of the things I realized that is if we can really help the workplace, honestly, our kids are going to be okay. We can help the home and workplace. And so Wellness Innovate is going to really help with the business side of creating safe places and hosting lunch and learns where people can come and talk the same way we did at the conference, really continuing the conversation. And then the goal is to actually have one of our conferences in every city in Canada, and definitely not opposed to the United States. Anywhere warm, I'll go. I will go. If it's warm, call me up. January in California, you know? But really, the idea is to just create local conversations that connect us on a really large level. So every conference was locally driven. Every speaker was from that community. We didn't fly in special speakers. It was all locally run, which I'm just, that is, honestly, that thrills me, because it's about the people who are already in those places advocating and working, and then them coming together and seeing what we can do when we come out of our silos and connect with one another.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly we had, I mean, I was at the Calgary conference, as you know. We had some great table conversation with our small group. I think there was 8 on our table, with everyone sharing, you know, their particular experience, what had drawn them to the conference, and, you know, what was some important messaging, and coming up with a, you know, a theme, as it were. So it's interesting that in each of those 3 cities, there was so much commonality. And given that, you know, we can't necessarily wave a magic wand over the healthcare system, you know, what can we as, you know, parents, we as advocates, it, people interested in shifting this conversation, you know, what is it that we can do that will support this movement that's already gotten some momentum? So are you also looking for volunteers? Are you looking for anything else to help with that, you know, creating that safe place, those conversations?
Yes. So we invite people into the movement, you know, for the conferences and our events. We definitely need volunteers. We need all kinds of skill sets throughout the year. But one of the greatest ways people can get involved is just by emailing us at nationalhopetalks@gmail.com and just saying, I'm in. And then we send them an email and we ask them, you know, like, what is mental health looking like in your context? And how can this movement assist what you're already doing? Everyone's able to send in a paragraph of what they're doing, and we send that to everyone on our email list. There's also an opportunity for us to advocate and tell their story through our social media and our YouTube channel. We just really want to give a platform for people to tell their story and for people to know about it and discover one another. I picture it as a big puzzle, and we all carry a piece of the puzzle. And when we try to solve our puzzle with just our one piece, we get frustrated. But when we can find others that complete our puzzle, That's when the solutions come and the answers and the creativity. And so we're just hoping to be dot connectors.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a powerful imagery. I mean, certainly I think when I was in the hospital, I definitely felt like a lone puzzle piece, you know, trying to have doctors assess whether there was something medically going on or whether it was psychologically, or, you know, and how to put these things together. And, you know, just where's the box sometimes? Where's the box that has the puzzle pieces? And where, you know, where's that hiding? Just even knowing that there is a box and that there are puzzle pieces that can be put together. You know, navigating through our healthcare system can definitely be a challenge. So in terms of resources that you've run across, is there anything in particular that you would like to share? I know I made a couple of great connections at the event, one of them being the executive director for the Canadian Mental Health Association. So if you're not familiar with that group, their Recovery College offers a number of free courses for anyone who's struggling with, you know, different things. I mean, it could be, you know, as simple as, I say simple, not simple for some, but it could be something such as, you know, getting a good night's sleep, you know, or the art of friendship, or, you know, confronting discomfort, you know, body image, keeping calm, hopes and dreams. There's a number of sessions that they host through Recovery College, which I was curious to find out about. If you're not familiar with that particular program, I encourage you to go check it out, recoverycollegecalgary.ca, and check out what is available, because, you know, there are supports that are out there, and that was one set of supports that I hadn't run across before. And education is power. Information is power.
So true.
Yeah. So any final thoughts as we get to the last, you know, 5 minutes of the show today? Anything that you particularly want to share that you've learned along the way that you and only you could have experienced because of your background, because of what happened with your son, because of the learning, because of the shifts that you've seen? Any wisdom nuggets you'd like to share before we wrap up?
Well, you know, I think the biggest thing that I have learned is when I was sitting with my son in his rage, in his dysregulation, in his brokenness, it really brought up mine. And I feel like I was the one who really changed that year. Having to face my own darkness, while facing his, really having things come to the surface, and really having to face, like, why would this bother me so much? And realizing that a lot of us are very afraid of what it looks like to be seen. We all really want people to see the nice picture of us, and we filter it and put it on Instagram. But, you know, are we really okay with brokenness? Because to be broken is also a human experience. It's all of the above. It's the beauty, the wonder, the confidence, the courage, and it's also the great opposition that we go through that makes us who we are. And I believe that these experiences are such an opportunity for us to find out the strength within, but we can't find it if we don't look at it. And I'm so thankful. It took more bravery than I'll ever know, but I'm glad that I faced it with some courage, the very little courage I had, because my courage grew that year. And my ability to now be able to connect with people in their darkest moments is so much greater because I was willing to face the darkness in me. And I think that if we're just willing to become a little bit more human, I think we'll find it a lot easier to connect with people and find the joy in connection again.
Willing to dig deep. It's so, so important. When I think about, you know, the work that I do today with my clients, I mean, so much of it is around confidence and confident conversations. And I know that I wouldn't be able to do the level of work that I do had I not, you know, gone through some pretty big healing around life experiences growing up, around, you know, having the confidence to advocate for my son when he was smaller, and, you know, what his needs were, and just being able to, you know, hold space, even, you know, in public places where everyone's staring and they don't know what to do, to allow him to work through what he needed in order to come out the other side again. I mean, he didn't always need to go to the hospital when he was having a seizure. He would get through it and it would pass. But just being able to, you know, have some of those deeper, darker conversations, you know, work through a variety of different processes, the healing journey, and come out the other side. As you say, it really does deepen the capacity for empathy with others and to be able to really listen. And I think that, you know, when I did a little survey recently on Facebook, you know, a couple of the things that came back from other people were really about the, you know, public awareness of, you know, helping and supporting my son to, you know, be his best person. And then also, you know, the importance of role modeling, what it is that, you know, is important for other people to step into, to be able to embrace. And if they see it, much as I see you standing confidently on stage and saying, you know, bring them closer, bring them closer, bring them closer, such an important message to confidently be sharing. So thank you for the work that you're doing and for bringing your whole self to the conversation, and look forward to being of service and keeping in touch. So if you've heard and really connected with what Connie's saying, please do reach out, nationalhopetalks@gmail.com. That email again, nationalhopetalks@gmail.com. Just simply say, I'm in, and that will connect you with the work that Connie's doing. On her website, if you're interested in learning more or finding out more about that book, so at Connie Jacob, so CONNIEJAKAB.com/books, will give you access to pre-order a copy of Bring Them Closer. And if you're intrigued about the work that I'm doing myself and my book, feel free to hop on my website. There's a short video that was put together for the launch of the book when it hit bestseller status overnight in November 1st to 2nd of 2018. And it's called Words, Women, and Wisdom, The Modern Art of Confident Conversations. There's 40 different words and word concepts there to help women elevate their language so they can ask for what they want and get it. And it's helping women to really step into some interesting conversations, and I'm happy to add some extra work around that. So wordswomenandwisdom.com is the website. And if anything in our conversation today has touched you and you'd like to dig further into this conversation, feel free to connect with Connie through Facebook or Messenger. Reach out to me, and we're happy to have that conversation continue. So, Connie, thank you so much for sharing all of yourself in this conversation today, sharing your story, the important work you're doing with Hope Movement. And I think that, you know, what I'm hearing is this is a growing movement, and there's some serious work that we can all do to help create safe places where we can have the conversations that need to be had, because no one is perfect in life. There's always something that we can be working towards, shifting, expanding, and growing. And when we can reach out and help someone else to do that, to get there faster, it really is one of the things I'm passionate about, and I know you are as well.
Yes.
So thank you, Connie. Any final goodbyes before we head off for the rest of the day?
Oh, no. Thank you so much for having me, Yvonne. This has been so nice.
You're welcome. Love what you're doing. Love how you're doing it. And just encourage you to keep up doing the great work, because certainly, you know, with my experience and my son, I get how challenging it can be to navigate through the system. And there's definitely more work to be done there. So thank you for joining me today. And have a great day, everybody.